Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice they give to other veterans seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 159 with Charlie Jordan.
I learned about cattle after I bought a herd of five Texas Longhorns. That's an interesting thing in itself, because once I put these Longhorns inside my barn, one thing I had to figure out is, you know, what do I need to feed them? How do I take care of them? The other part was, how in the heck am I going to get them out of my barn into the pasture? Because that wasn't established yet. So, you know, lots of friends that decided to come over and help. And, you know, I never saw those friends again after they came over, because it was hard work. So they didn't want to come back and visit me. But, you know, just learning, I learned all my stuff basically by books. I go to my discount bookstore, I buy a book on raising chickens or raising beef cattle. I'd read that book on a deployment, or at, you know, when I had some time off, I'd read it and I'd go out and, you know, try to think of myself as an expert, and that was, you know, completely false.
Normally at the start of the show, I give you a handful of reasons to listen to today's episode. Today, I am not going to do that. I'm going to say, just listen to this one. It's one of my favorite episodes out of 158 other interviews so far. I cannot imagine a job more different than my own, but I also can't imagine a single career path that wouldn't benefit from hearing Charlie's story today. So stick around after the episode. We'll have a little fireside chat where we talk about some key takeaways from the interview. And if you have a moment, it would mean the world to me to leave a positive review on iTunes. So with that, let's dive in today's episode with Charlie. Joining me today in Clarksville, Tennessee is Charlie Jordan. Charlie, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start off by thanking Steve Bain for introducing me to Charlie. Steve had reached out a while back and asked me if I'd heard of something called the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which I hadn't. He had told me that they help interested veterans transition into farming and issue grants through the Farmer Veteran Fellowship Fund to purchase equipment, supplies, etc. That sounded really interesting, and so Steve was kind enough to introduce me to today's guest. And so for listeners, I wanted to give a background on Charlie, because he is the owner and operator of the Circle J Ranch LLC, which is a veteran-owned small farm in Middle Tennessee, and they specialize in all-natural freezer beef, vegetables, and farm-fresh egg sales. Charlie served in the U.S. Army on active duty for 28 years and retired as a chief warrant officer in 2017. He is an adjunct assistant professor for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, a consultant for the University of Tennessee Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, and the leader of the Farmer Veteran Coalition of Tennessee Organizing Committee. I don't even know where to start, but I'll just start with, you know, you started, it looks like, Circle J Ranch while you were on active duty. What was the genesis there? How did that all come about?
Well, kind of the background on it is, I don't have a farming background. I kind of got interested in farming when I was a little kid back in the early 80s, basically 1980, 82. My grandfather was in the military, so we went up to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I was only 10, 11 years old, but I had lots of friends that were farmers and are farming kids. So I got to spend time with them on my time off from school on the weekends, and it just kind of stuck with me. So after a 2-year tour was up, we moved back to Florida, where I was from, and not a lot of agriculture where I lived. I lived on a little island near Pensacola Beach, Florida. So I grew up as a surfer and a skateboarding kid. So it just kind of stuck with me. Joined the Army in 1989, and then I had the chance to come back to Fort Campbell about 2001. And when I came back, I said, you know, I want to buy a little farm finally. And I had the chance to buy the piece of property I'm on. And about 2002 is when I decided this farming thing's kind of cool. Started out with horses and little things like that. We were in a traveling rodeo at the time, while I was still on active duty, but my stepdaughter was a rodeo kid. She got out of rodeo, like any good teenager would when there's other distractions like cars and boys. So she, you know, moved on, and we got rid of the horses, and I decided to try this little thing with cattle. And it kind of came around to, geez, I can go ahead and process these cattle and sell some of the meat. So about 2009, I decided, hey, this is something I maybe want to get a little serious into. I started raising a couple more cows, Texas Longhorns and Herefords. And I kind of started building a little bit of a niche market for my customers for wanting healthy, all-natural beef. And that kind of grew from there. And then, of course, I had chickens, which they are the starting point for any farmer veteran, because once you get one chicken, then about the following year, you'll have about 500 of them. That's how it goes. In 2010, I had the opportunity to purchase more properties. So I purchased 20 more acres through the Farm Service Agency, beginning farmer loans and farm ownership loans. So I finally got my my large property. I put my cattle herd out there, and about 2014, that's when I started looking more towards the Farmer Veteran Coalition as something I wanted to be a part of, and I looked more serious into, I think, agriculture was what I wanted to do when I retired.
I mean, I love that. It's refreshing actually to hear. I didn't know a lot about your background before this call, and so I didn't know if you had grown up farming. And so it's refreshing and less intimidating to know that this wasn't your background growing up. This is something that just kind of came out of curiosity and exploration. And I'm wondering, you know, when you first bought that plot of land, especially, you know, if someone's listening and this is maybe a path they want to go down, about, you know, what's a range of money that someone would need to have set aside to actually buy land and then, you know, maybe start with chickens or whatever as they start with? Could you give like a ballpark range?
Yeah, agriculture is not getting started in agriculture, any type, what it may be, you know, small ruminants like goats, things like that, sheep, large ruminants, you know, livestock, anything like that, plants in it, it's going to cost money, bottom line. So when I first looked at this property, I was actually in Korea on a tour there, and I came home for a two-week break. I came to Clarksville, Tennessee, where Fort Campbell is, and I started looking at properties. I looked over 30 different properties in a two-day period, and this property was actually the last one I looked at. It was 5 acres, had a little tiny house on it, a little detached garage, and that was all that I had on it. And I was trying to figure out how would I be able to buy a farm, because I wanted to use my VA loan. Well, I found out that using my VA loan, I can buy a farm. There's some rules that are associated with it, and they're, you know, it's free public information. You can look it up. But I was like, you know, I want to use my VA loan. I want to buy this little tiny, you know, soon to be farm. It wasn't a farm when I moved out here. Obviously, it had probably 6 foot grass out here, and you know, no one had lived in here yet. It was sitting out here for about 2 years, and at the time, it wasn't a cool place to get because it was a little farther from Fort Campbell. And there was some work involved. So I bought it. And over the years, starting about 2002, that's when I got my first outbuilding, and then just kind of grew from there. So I had the, you know, obviously I was active duty at the time. I'd already been in quite a while. I was 13 years already in. So, I mean, I was already making enough money. But then, you know, honestly, the biggest thing that helped me and financing this thing and get it going was my deployment schedule. I was continuously deployed from early 2002 all the way to my last deployment in 2014. And during that time, I was able to, you know, save my TDY money. I was able to save my deployment money, my trip money, everything that extra pay I was getting from the Army. Being in, I was an organization that traveled a lot and did a lot of training and stuff in different places. So it gave me the opportunity to take that money, save it. And, you know, that really helped me. But kind of going back to start out, I mean, I couldn't even give you an honest figure. To know that there are several resources out there. One of them for veterans being your VA loan. Start there first. And then from there, with the 2014 Farm Bill, they actually put in that veterans in there as part of the beginning farmers, which that opens you up to a lot of different financial assistance ways, loans to the Farm Service Agency, and also other things like the farm credit. There's different grants and stuff out there. So it takes a little bit. I tell everybody now that, you know, if you want to go out and buy 100 acres, get ready for the money it's going to cost to buy that property, and get ready for the money it's going to cost to put either fencing or something out there. Start small, because you don't know if you're going to stay with this or not. So start small. I say buy an acre. If you want to buy an acre, great. You can grow, you know, hundreds of pounds of vegetables on an acre of land. I'm a big proponent of, you know, grow food, not grass. So look at, you know, starting out small. And if you start out small, well, your budget's going to be smaller. If, you know, you want to start out huge, well, get ready for it. It's going to be some sticker shock when it comes to buying a tractor and all the implements, farm equipment that you're going to need to take care of that, you know, big plot of land. I learned pretty quick about that, you know, especially when it comes to fencing. You know, as far as financials, money, a certain number, it really varies from, you know, from startup costs all the way to, you know, just keeping your farm going every day until you try to get self-sustainable. That doesn't always happen in a fast rate of time. That's the goal, is to just be self-sustainable and to be able to, you know, keep the farm going.
I, you know, regardless of what career someone goes into, I love that advice of starting small, that thought of buying that acre and testing it out and seeing if you like it and seeing if you're good at it, seeing if you can turn a profit. And there's many people with great intentions that go whole hog into something and get in a little bit over their head. And my experience, you know, with technology startups is that everything takes 10 times longer and 10 times more money than you expect. And I can only imagine that as you're growing this farm, there must be so many unexpected things that happen or things that you didn't even know about, and that the cost can really ramp up. And so I think that's such great advice of just starting with just, you know, just an acre and going from there.
Yeah, the biggest thing too is, you know, get you know, educated. You know, I tell that, I preach that now. It's like go and get an education on what you want to do. If you want to be into poultry, either for meat, birds, or you want to just sell eggs, study about it. Find out how much, you know, it's going to cost to start up. Little hint here that chickens will out-eat your budget and pretty quick. So be prepared for that. I wasn't aware of that. You know, I had just a few chickens and I grew my flock to about 20 birds. And, you know, I would go out and feed them. And 5 minutes later, I walk back out and they look like they're starving to death, like they've never eaten in their life. You know, it's just the way they are. They're like, you know, they're ground-based vultures. You know, they eat everything and anything, you know, and it's pretty amazing when you learn that. Same with cattle. I learned about cattle after I bought a herd of 5 Texas Longhorns. That's an interesting thing in itself, because once I put these longhorns inside my barn, one thing I had to figure out is, you know, what do I need to feed them? How do I take care of them? The other part was, how in the heck am I going to get them out of my barn into the pasture? Because that wasn't established yet. So, you know, lots of friends that decided to come over and help. And, you know, I never saw those friends again after they came over, because it was hard work. So they didn't want to come back and visit me. But, you know, just learning, I learned and all my stuff basically by books. I would go to my discount bookstore, I'd buy a book on raising chickens or raising beef cattle. I'd read that book on a deployment, or at, you know, when I had some time off, I'd read it and I'd go out and, you know, try to think of myself as an expert, and that was, you know, completely false. So, you know, it's been a big learning curve. It's been pretty much a learning event each and every day. You know, things break on a farm. So farming taught me how to weld. My welds aren't pretty. There's not, they're not the welds that you would see in a fancy, shop, with some fancy stuff. My welds are awful, but you know what? They're gonna hold. It may look gross, but I can tell you that piece of metal is never gonna break again. That was something I learned, because there comes cost in that. Well, you got to go and buy a little, welder. And then I had a friend, luckily, that knew how to weld, so he kind of showed me. And that kind of helps. So you got to learn that. You got to learn how to take care of the farm equipment too. That's going to break. So there's more cost in that. A good thing, here in the state of Tennessee is they have an agricultural exemption policy, where you can apply for it, get an agricultural tax exemption, and then anything you buy for farming, and they have a exhaustive list of stuff, everything you need, everything you know, as far as oil, feed, anything like that. Well, I get a tax break on it. Well, that's good. It helps a little bit. And those are the little things that no one told me. I had to go out and find them myself in an age where internet resources wasn't very good at the time. So now, lots more resources to get educated and to learn about, if this thing breaks, or if that animal's sick, and this is what you have to do.
I find it so inspiring, that thought of just going to the discount bookstore and getting the book and learning and teaching yourself. And I just think that that's an approach that would work in any career path, and just the tenacity that takes to just dive into something completely foreign. I can imagine that's just so frustrating at times, but so fulfilling that you're learning and growing and applying. And I just admire too, this thought of you being on active duty and socking away every spare cent because you had this tangible goal and you had these books that you're learning. I just love this thought of how you were so proactive while on active duty of preparing for what you were going to do when you got out.
Yeah, I started looking, obviously, at retirement about 2 years out, about 2015. I started looking at retirement and what I wanted to do. I saw, that agriculture was what I wanted to do. I was an aviator by trade. I was a pilot for over 20 years of my career. But, I really didn't want to go back into the cockpit. I still loved aviation. Obviously, I'm a adjunct professor for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, so I still enjoyed the aviation as a whole. I just didn't want to fly anymore. So I need to, I looked at farming, agriculture as my way. And so I started educating myself more. Like I said before, that's when I really got interested in helping, counseling, and consulting veterans and active duty to get into agriculture, that it was a viable career path. And not just taking care of chickens and cows, but a lot of soldiers coming out of the military have great, heavy equipment experience. They have great managerial experience, so that works great when it comes to agriculture, whether it be in the corporate or the private sector. And that's what I tried to focus on, was like, how can I go through the transition program and be able to make agriculture work for me? So I set out to make sure that I attended every single class that was provided for me through the Transition Assistance Program with the Army. I went through every seminar. I went to every extra seminar that the program made available to me, and I learned a whole bunch. And one thing I learned is that, yes, agriculture is not one of the not one of the subjects that they look at. So I made that a part of my mission, to get agricultural out to more veterans. So when I was done with the transition program, I was like, I've got enough skills to basically continue what I wanted to do. They gave me skills about entrepreneurship and how to, boots the business, and how to manage, debt, how to work a business plan, how to build resumes. And I try to, combine all that in and say, this could work for me in agriculture.
That's really incredible. What I have so many questions I want to dive into, but maybe just to back up, could you share kind of what is Circle J Ranch today? I gave like a one sentence snippet, but could you kind of talk about what your company is at this point?
Yeah, it's just a it's a small small veteran-owned farm. That would be me. I have no employees except myself. It's combined with 25 acres is the total amount that I own, and then I handshake lease with a couple of neighbors of mine, other landowners, on another 100, about 160 acres, and I cut hay for my cows on that property. And then the property I own, the 20 acres I keep my cattle on, and a couple other things I do out there. And then my 5 acres that I actually live on with my house is kind of my main operation. I started working with horticulture, vegetables, and stuff last year. Once I retired in the summer, I started going into more raised bed gardens, aeroponics, which is a type of hydroponic operation with water. And use of water to grow plants, that, and also experimenting with different raised bed garden designs and different little greenhouse designs. I try to build everything on a small budget. Anything I build, it's either built on free stuff that I've either got from other people or from other places, or it's very cheaply bought. And I try to give like an example to other farmer veterans that, like, hey, you don't need to be rich, to do this. You just need, you have materials around you. You just need to, look at them and look them at a different way. Like, I could build something with this. I could build a raised bed garden. I could build a small hoop house, greenhouse out of just some cattle panels, some wood, and some plastic sheeting, and a couple of nails. So that kind of got that started. And then my freezer beef operation, I've been doing that since the beginning. I process about 2 to 3 cows per year. Very small operation when it comes to that compared to, to some larger operations. But I have a very select niche market of people who want to know who their farmer is, who want all natural beef, all natural being defined as. I don't use any GMO products. I don't use any antibiotics. I don't use any growth hormones in my cows. They live their life as they would if they were just, free out in the, great pastures of the world. I don't mess with them. They're very friendly, very docile. I don't stress them. If I do feed them any grain, it's because they've been nice and haven't destroyed the fence. So I'll probably, I'll give them some all natural GMO free grain per se, and then all my hay is all natural. And then I'll raise these cows for the amount of time that I think is appropriate, and I'll process them. All my beef is certified, inspected USDA, and also it comes with my label on it for my ranch. And I sell that basically off farm sales and also on farm sales and through my Facebook page. And you just contact me, and I like it that way because it gives a customer a choice to say, hey, I only want 2 pounds of ground beef. Okay, well, I'll sell you 2 pounds of ground beef. Or, hey, I want 50 pounds of ground beef. Okay, well, I'll sell you 50. So you don't have to come in and buy a quarter, half, whole cow. You have your choice. And I've seen that's kind of worked better with my customers. For my vegetables, they're all raised naturally on my farm. I raise a variety of things. Last year, I was more into peppers, herbs, and potatoes, and some tomatoes, and I sold them as farm boxes. My farm boxes consist of a just a little box, commercially bought box. It's got the Homegrown by Heroes label on it, which I can get into also. But I fill up the box with a variety of vegetables, give them 2 pounds of ground beef and a dozen eggs, and I sell that for about $20 to $25. And usually I'll have about five boxes available on a Saturday, and I'll sell out of those things in about 20 or 25 minutes. So that really helps with paying the bills, and buying more seed and feed and stuff. So that portion also, I do wild vegetables, mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms. I grow in oak logs down in the wood line on my property. I'll maintain about 20 logs. I have a new crop this year. Hopefully in the spring I'll have a good crop of shiitakes. And I sell those at a variety of prices depending on how many I have for the year. For my farm, for my eggs, farm fresh eggs, I just wait for the ladies to give me, you know, as many as I can. I harvest them every day, clean them up, put them in the cartons, put my label on it, and I usually sell those at different varieties of prices depending on what the market's showing. And that's about it.
I love it. I'm smiling as you're like talking about the shiitake mushrooms and each thing you mentioned. I'm picturing you going to the bookstore and learning about this new element you're going to introduce to your ecosystem. And my wife especially would love everything you're saying. There's this great Portlandia sketch where they go to a restaurant and they ask questions about the chicken they're going to eat and the name of the chicken, where it was raised, if it had siblings. And she's that type of person who really wants to know that the food she's eating was raised responsibly and that the animals were treated well. And so everything you're describing, I know, would resonate with her. But so many people today, it's such a big movement that you're tapping into. I'm wondering, like, what does your day look like? Because I'm just putting myself in your shoes. I'm basing most of what I know about farming on cartoons, basically. So I'm picturing you wake up at 4 a.m. and you're working till 9 p.m. But then I'm thinking, like, that's, you know, there's probably a chunk that's just maintaining everything. But you're also, you're doing the sales and you're doing, you know, you're talking about seeing materials and building new structures. Could you just kind of take us through what a typical day might look like in your life?
Well, you know, I just retired in the summer, last summer, 2017. So, this whole thing is new, having my own schedule. When I retired, you know, I've been in as long, you know, almost 29 years, and I had somebody, you know, making a schedule for me. You know, I was always on some schedule for, you know, since I was 18 years old. And then coming out and I'm 47 years old, well, I have to come up with my own schedule for the day. So it's a very interesting question because honestly, I haven't quite figured out what my schedule is yet. I'm fully disabled, 100% disability. And I don't have another job. This is my job other than, you know, online teaching. So when I wake up in the morning, honestly, I have to sit there and make a conscious effort to figure out what I'm going to do for the day. I know I have farming involved, but every day is, especially in the wintertime, there's not a lot of farming that goes on as intensive as it is in the spring and summer and fall. So during the winter, I usually, you know, rise and shine out of bed, have a good, nice cup of coffee. I'll look out in my sunroom and make sure all my aeroponic tower gardens that I have out there, which I have six of them, which are growing a variety of lettuce and cabbage and kale and spinach and Swiss chard and greens. That's all in these towers. So I look out there, make sure all everything's nice and green and growing well. I'll check my seedlings for the spring, which I've already planted in a tiny little greenhouse that I have actually inside my house for my seedlings. I'll look outside and just make sure all the chickens are still there and, you know, nothing got to them at night. From there, I'll just, you know, look at, you know, updating my, social media, accounts, my ranch, farm page, my, Farmer Veteran Coalition of Tennessee page, different, other things that I work with, like, Tennessee, beginning farmers, and I'll update those. And then from there, it's like, you know, hey, I got to go out and feed the cows some hay and go see how they're doing. And I go out there and of course, you know, cows are always happy to see you. Cows are never upset with you. And that's a great thing. Especially, you know, being a veteran and, you know, and doing what I did. And it's nice to, you know, have somebody smile at you and they're just always happy because they know you may have some nice little treat for them in the back of your truck. So once that's done, I'll come home, I'll feed the chickens. They're always happy to see me also. And then for the rest of the day, I just, you know, either go and fix some equipment that I need to fix, that I, you know, just kind of, you know, decided to do that day, or I'll go out and fix fences, which is always a, you know, that's always a treat to do every day. But you know, it varies. It really does vary. I mean, going back, you know, having a schedule, my entire adult life, and not to say I'm not enjoying it, because this is pretty nice where I can just go take a nap when I want to. So it's every day, I'll put it this way, every day is a new adventure, and it's great.
It sounds amazing. I'm like tempted to just sell everything I have and do that. It just sounds so incredible to be spending that time outside, to be doing something so creatively energizing, and that's really, really incredible. Could you have done this without the military retirement?
I could have. I could have done it. It would have been probably different because I know I have a little bit more of advantage than say some of the kids are coming out of the military. I say kids because I mean some of them are 24 years old, 23, 24 years old. They did a 3 or 4 year tour in the Army. They want to come out. They want to be they've looked into agriculture. Again, it goes back to what I said before with getting an education of what you want to do. And figure out, what you want to do when you get out. But I think I would have got into it anyway, because, agriculture makes me, it makes me happy. It calms me down from, everyday stress. It really helped me while I was active duty. It was, even no matter how mad I was or how frustrated I was at a day at work, or when I got off the aircraft after, a deployment, and I would come home, I would be instantly calm down or happy once I went out to see my cows, once I, put my hands in the dirt, once I went out to see my chickens, once I was just on my farm, the stress, I could feel it go away. And that was the part that really kept me going in this career path. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the value for anyone on active duty of having that tangible goal. Just really, I mean, it sounds like you had a clear picture of what you wanted to do after the military, and that gave you the leverage to put away every cent that you could, and it gave you the leverage to be learning in the nooks and crannies of your deployment, and it also gave you that happy spot. You're like thinking on these bad days, like you've got that vision of where you're headed. And I just love that way in which you had a very defined objective you were going after. And I just imagine that gave so much more purpose to the edges of your military experience.
Yeah, I mean, while I was in, while my last few years, and I tried to, put this out to others also, is like, even though you may only come in for the Army or military or whatever it might be, whatever service it might be, and you come in for 3 or 4 years or whatever, you could still have a goal at the end of that. Look at it. Your goal may be just to go to college or get out of the Army and stuff. So take advantage of any program that you can while you're in the service, any transitional program that there is, anything that, you can go ahead and refine that goal. It may not be the goal at the end, but at least you're working towards it. Because the worst thing that, I hate seeing it too, is just military members getting out of the Army either by retirement or just on their own, just decide to get out and not having anything, set, no goal set when they get out. That's not helpful, in life, just look at a goal, pick that goal, stay with it. And then after, you're out, stay with that goal as much as you can. If you want to change it, that's fine, but at least have something when you get out.
I love that. You've mentioned a couple different organizations, and I wanted to give space for you to go into more detail. You talked about Homegrown by Heroes. You've talked about the Farmer Veteran Coalition. Could you talk about these and any other organizations that a veteran wanting to pursue this career path should check out?
Yeah. When I decided to get more involved with veterans agriculture, I was looking for something that was bigger than just a local movement. I say back then, this has only been like 3 years ago, but it's amazing in 3 years how much everything's grown. But I wanted something bigger, so I went searching on the internet. I was a warrant officer and where I was at, and I had time to be on the internet because I was the old guy in the back office. So I got on the internet and I just started looking. I was like, there's got to be something out there for veterans that want to be farmers. So I just put in the search for it, and I never forget it, I put in farmer veterans. And first thing I showed up is Farmer Veteran Coalition. I was like, well, ain't this cool? I was like, well, what is this thing? So I started reading. I went into their website. Their website is farmvetco.org. And I looked at it, and I was like, well, hey, this is really cool. It started in 2008 by a man. His name was Michael Gorman. This guy had been in the agricultural industry for over 40 years. He's forgot more than I'll ever know when it comes to farming. And he decided back then to start a movement, a coalition of veterans. It was a wide variety of veterans when he first started. It was, there was only a few, I think there's only like five. And then there was a few, families of veterans. One of the family members actually was Pat Tillman's mother. Actually had been a part of this in the beginning. So it had started, and this was like I said, 2014, 13, 14 is when I started looking at it. So they've been around a little while. And as I started researching more and, you know, and became a member of them, then I started seeing lots of really cool programs and things that they were doing. One of them was a branding marketing for veterans and their farm, which is called Homegrown by Heroes. Homegrown by Heroes was initially started by the Kentucky Department of Agriculture, and they want KDA, as they're called, Kentucky Department of Agriculture, wanted to have something for their veterans, so it was under Kentucky Proud, and they started Homegrown by Heroes. Well, back in 2013, Homegrown by Heroes went ahead and announced that they were going to be jointly together with Kentucky Proud with the Homegrown by Heroes label. And when you become a Farmer Veteran Coalition member, you can apply to be a Homegrown by Heroes label holder, if you will. And this gives you a branding on your products, which says to your customers, like, hey, this product was produced by a veteran farmer with all the care and everything that goes with it. And, we'd like for you to buy our product because, one, it supports my farm and me, but you're also supporting farmer veterans. So then from there, it kind of grew out a little bit more. I started being involved with other organizations. It kind of opened up some stuff. So the Farmer Veteran Coalition puts on a stakeholders conference every year. This year we didn't have one, but next year we will. But I went to Sacramento, California for my first conference, and this was in 2015. And once I got there, I just became just completely, inspired, 100% inspired, just like totally like went into it, with all feet, everything into it. And as I'm flying back from this 3-day seminar, I'm flying back to Nashville, Tennessee, I start writing down on a ledger of paper all the things that I want to do. And once I landed, I had, a page and a half of ledger filled with these programs and different things I wanted to do. It really inspired me. So I started getting together with different agencies, some being U.S. Department of Agriculture, Farm Service Agency, University of Tennessee, Tennessee State University, Tennessee Department of Agriculture. I can name so many of them. And I decided in 2016 that I was going to have my own farmer veteran workshop here in Clarksville, Tennessee, Montgomery County. So I spent about 3 months putting everything together, information, speakers, presenters, vendors to come, and show their stuff, what they have. And it was going to be free for active duty and veterans here throughout Tennessee, not just in Montgomery County, but I invited, anybody in the state could come. So I paid for lunch on my own ticket. And so I was hoping I'd have 20 people show up. That was my goal. So if I have 20, veterans or former veterans that are already into it or active duty, then I called that a success. Well, when we opened the doors and we were finished everything, it was 98 people that showed up. And it was standing room only. And I'm like, my God, I never would have imagined this. And I had a local mayor show up. I had some local representatives from our local government, Tennessee government, and they showed up. And they were very surprised also that there was this much desire and this much interest in what was going on. So that just gave me more fuel to get into more of what I was doing. So I started partnering up with different organizations, agency. One of them is Tennessee Agribility Project. Agribility Project is actually out of Purdue University. It's a grant-funded project through the USDA, and it helps disabled farmers continue farming. And that's just not, just regular civilian farmers. Well, the push is also for disabled veterans to get into this, which I'm a big, push for. And also then I started partnering up with University of Tennessee itself, the Agricultural Extension, Tennessee State University, Tennessee Department of Agriculture. And it all kind of came together, and they saw what was happening, what was going on, what I was doing was a good thing. And it led to a partnership with University of Tennessee, where I'm a consultant for the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, which is a grant-funded program, which we actually got awarded back in August. So that gives me an opportunity to really get out and talk and speak, for prospective farmer veterans to farmer veterans that have been doing this for so many years but never knew that any of this existed, any of these programs. And there's so many now, educational programs, monetary, financial programs, business building programs, just so many now that didn't exist literally 3 years ago. And then we come back around to the Farmer Veteran Coalition, where I decided I'd approach the FVC, as they're called, Farmer Veteran Coalition, FVC, to let me build a chapter in the state of Tennessee. So I've been actively building this thing for, about a year. I have an organizing committee. I'm the leader of the committee, and we're slowly starting to build this thing bigger in Tennessee, where we're going to have a charter chapter of the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which is going to be the Farmer Veteran Coalition of Tennessee. This will allow me to start building funding to provide travel stipends for farmer veterans that want to go to conferences, registration fees, stuff to pay for their hotels and their just regular travel expenses, scholarships to go attend either in-state or out-of-state farming schools or seminars or conferences. And also for it to be a meeting place and a gathering place for other farmer veterans to share information. So they don't have to be like I was and others who struggled in the beginning to try to figure out how to do things. And now the information basically just, it's so numerous and prevalent everywhere. It's amazing how this has grown.
It's great to hear that there's so many resources to support veterans going down this path, but I also just really love the way in which you've taken a resource that's helped you and you're really contributing to make it more successful and really helping your area and other veterans consider this. I think that's very, very admirable.
Yeah, the thing I tell, well, when I do my presentations, I do a lot of little bullet points. But the biggest thing is, if you want to be successful in this, you got to get out there. You have to get yourself out there. A lot of, including myself, I'm naturally a shy guy. I'm pretty much to myself. A lot of veterans are, because, one thing is, when I kind of go back to, veterans, when they get out of the military, they really don't want to work for anybody. They won't work for themselves. They want to be on their own boss because we've had a boss. I've had a boss, for 28 years, so I want to be my own boss. I wanted to be the one that, made the schedule. I want to be the one that, did the things I wanted to do with my personal business, my little farm. So, that you have to get yourself out there, using social media. Using any type of advertising you can, you got to, go out there and you got to sell your product. You got to sell what you produce. And, if you want to have a hobby farm just for yourself to produce for your family, that's awesome. If you want to, produce enough where you can have little CSAs or community supported agriculture little things, then, that's, you have to get yourself out. You got to advertise. You say, hey, look, this is me. One, don't be afraid to let people know you're a veteran. Use it. use it, to help promote yourself, but because that's what you got to do. I mean, it's just like a resume. You know, you're promoting yourself out there to, prospective, people to, to come and buy your product, whether it's vegetables, beef, if it's something you made, woodworking stuff you made on your farm, whatever it is, whatever product you have. So use the Homegrown by Heroes label, use whatever other advertising ways that you have to get your name out there and for people to say, hey, there's a farmer veteran, there's a good agriculture operation that I might want to be a part of.
That's great. I don't think I knew this consciously, but I think when I thought of your career, to me, it seemed like a isolated career or a job where you're off on your own. And I appreciate what you're saying about the need to put yourself out there, the need to market and advertise and to get out there and be meeting people. And I imagine that is such a big component of what you do. But I also like the way that you explain that. I do think that so many veterans after their service, they are ready to strike out on their own. They've been, they've been in a highly structured organization where they're not calling the shots. And I can see the appeal of switching that and being in the driver's seat. And I just respect the way that, for someone who self-described introvert or likes to be more on your own, how you're willing to put yourself out there, how you're willing to talk about yourself. And that's consistently been one of the things that people on the show have talked about struggling with the most. In every single role I talk about, they talk about how hard it is in an interview to sell yourself. They talk about how difficult it is to speak about what you're doing. It's something I think we're programmed in the military against. And it sounds like something that you've overcome and that you're willing to put yourself out there and take that risk and talk about what you're doing and, talk about it on Facebook and talk about it in conferences. And I know that's not easy for most of the people I speak with.
Yeah. I mean, for an agriculture operation, whether it's small, medium, large, extra large, whatever, you gotta have an entrepreneur spirit. You gotta want to go in and look at it on an entrepreneur, on a business basis. I mean, yes, it's my life. That's what I love to do. I love my farm, love going out there. But you gotta do it obviously in moderation. You don't want to burn yourself out either. That's the last thing you want to do, because, you start doing that, then you don't love what you're doing and then you don't want to do it no more. And it just leads on to other stuff. So you got to have that entrepreneur spirit that you want to build this, you want to get out there, you want to create something that, in essence, it's yours. This is your thing. You have to just, look at, like, the only way this is going to be successful is if I get out there and make it successful. You can't just, sit back and, hopefully somebody comes up to your little farm stand at the farmer's market and hopefully they buy something. I mean, I'm an active seller at my farmer's markets. One technique I use, and it works really well, and I freely share it with anybody, is my marketing campaign at a farmer's market. Whether there's three people there, whether there's 30, whether there's 40 other vendors, I want to make myself stand out. I want people to come to my table. So one technique I use is I also grow fresh cut flowers on my farm, which I either sell to florists or a local florist, or I go ahead and sell at the farmer's market. So I have a variety of different flowers, roses, zinnias, name it, just wildflowers, different ones. So my farmer's market uniform is a kilt and usually just some farm t-shirt that I have and my boots, because I love kilts. They're great. Kilts are great to farm in, by the way. So what I'll do if I, look around in the crowd and stuff and I, see the people walking around, and if, I, the women that are out there, well, those right there, that's my target. So I go and I take these pretty red flowers and I go and I hand off a nice pretty flower to, all the ladies, because the ladies are the shoppers. They're the browsers. So in my experience, so I'll hand off, Rose, say, you look very nice today, ma'am. Here's a nice red flower for you. And by the way, I'm over here at Circle J Ranch LLC, or my table's over here, and I'm selling different types of products here. And they're like, oh, okay. And sure enough, bam, they'll come back by. Because like they'll say, hey, you know, that guy was nice enough to take his time to approach me and to wish me a nice compliment of the day. So I'm gonna go and visit his farm stand, and I tell you, it works. And I sell quite a bit of stuff, so obviously it's a technique that's worked for me.
I love that. I love that. It's like almost the opposite of everything I think of from people I've interviewed, where I think, my experience in the military, it's kind of like sometimes there's this tendency to want to fit in, to not stand out, to not draw attention. And what you're describing is the opposite, which is, and I love that it's like whether there's 3 people or 30 people there, your attitude is to get attention, whether that's wearing a kilt or whether that's going out and handing flowers, you're showing
Yeah.
that extra care, that extra oomph. And I know I respond to that too. Like when you see someone who is clearly passionate about what they do, probably, 2 out of 10 people will ridicule it. And I think 8 out of 10 people admire that. They respect that and they want to buy from someone who really cares about what they're doing and is willing to stand out. And I think that's just a great marketing tactic.
And that's what it is too. It's marketing. It's you can look around. There's several different things about marketing and how to work it. We have a we're lucky to have a or well, it's an organization. It's a part of the University of Tennessee Ag Extension University. It's called the Center for Profitable Agriculture, and it's here in Middle Tennessee. And that's what they specialize in, is showing farmers how to market themselves and how to put out or get out their product in a way that it's lucrative for them, that they can actually make some money. I mean, and to put yourself out there, advertisement, how to work social media, how to set up your farm stand, which I learned very quickly. That is very key. I mean, I used to have a bland farm stand. I'd have a table, a couple of things of vegetables on top, and I'm expecting people to come out and see me. Well, that ain't gonna happen because it's whatever. No, I have tablecloths, I have big banners now. I have me walking around. I have all my products and stuff out front with my signs. And that's my tools I use to be able to sell a couple of cucumbers or tomatoes on the weekend.
I love it. Well, I know we are short on time, and I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and that is that, you've provided so many things for me and I know the audience to think about. I just really love everything you've talked about, the creativity, the goal setting, the marketing. There's just so much here for people. What have we not talked about that you want to leave listeners with?
I've pretty much covered everything, but just to let perspective, farmer veterans, or whoever may be listening, that go into this, whatever you're doing with everything, put everything into it. You're only going to be as successful as you want to be, honestly. If you don't, if you don't put any effort into it, well, that's going to show. Go into it like you want to be rich, like you want to be the greatest agriculture operation in any whatever town you may be in. And do this, and if you're not successful right off the get-go, don't give up. Just keep going. The military gave gave us lots of traits that they're going to be with us forever. Selfless service, leadership, responsibility, discipline, perseverance. I mean, that for sure, especially after you might get your fence washed out a couple of times by a raging creek, and you have to rebuild your fence 3 times. Hint, hint, that's me. So, it's perseverance. You want to keep going. Veterans, have a no quit spirit in them, to keep going. And that's all I wish is to keep going with it. Don't give up.
Well, Charlie, I appreciate your sharing your story. And I guess maybe last thing I'll ask you is if people want to learn more about this, where can they find you online?
Yep. I have a couple different social media sites. Actually, I got like about 15 different accounts that I manage. But the first one, the main one would be Circle J Ranch TN, like Tennessee. You can find me on that's on Facebook, also on Instagram, and then also Farmer Veteran Coalition of Tennessee is my other Facebook page that I also manage, and it's just full of updates. You know, I put learning experiences on there, learning experiences that from myself, either good or bad, and different things that I do. So yeah, I welcome anybody and everybody to come and join in on my wonderful adventure.
Awesome. And for listeners, I'll add links to those in the show notes as well, so you can be sure to follow. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I wanted to cover a couple things as part of a fireside chat discussion of this episode. But the very first one is that right after we stopped recording, Charlie told me about one thing he forgot to mention, and that is yoga. He is a big fan of yoga for veterans. He thinks that the killer combination of yoga and farming is pretty much unbeatable. And if you haven't done anything with yoga, if you listen to my interview with Dr. Dan Libby, he talks about the Veterans Yoga Project. It's a great episode to explore this. I wholeheartedly agree. Yoga, meditation, I think these are both incredible tools to help people be happier, to help them be more productive. And I think that yoga, you know, compared to meditation, is a little bit more active way to get into that same sense of being present and being alert and aware that I think might resonate even more with veterans. So check out my interview with Dr. Dan Libby. Here's some of the things that stood out for me from today's show, and I would love to hear what stood out for you in the show notes and the comments section of this episode. But I first of all loved Charlie's thought of starting small. I think this applies to so many different career paths, but that thought that he described of buying an acre, budgeting smaller, and that way you have a lot more capacity when things take longer or cost more money, and you have that chance to dabble and see if you're really interested before becoming too financially, emotionally, or time committed to a certain project. I know for entrepreneurship, this is a great piece of advice, not just for farming. I've met with so many different entrepreneurs who have an idea, they invest so much into it before validating it for themselves or their market, and they realize that the bigger business is something entirely different. But at that point, they've sunk in too much time or too much money, and they don't have enough runway to go with this new idea. So I love that thought of starting small. I also just really, one thing that resonated with me is the creativity involved in Charlie's work, where he's using resources around the farm that he finds and building them into something he needs and learning from discount books. There's just so much creativity that came through in that career, and that's not something I would have associated with farming at the start, but I really appreciated that from this episode. Goal setting, that's one of the biggest things I took away from this episode. And there's a great line from Stephen King, one of his books, The Gunslinger, where he says, you know, let your shadow grow hair. And in my mind, that's what I think of just really letting something become vivid for you. A professor at Stanford Business School called it a big, hairy, audacious goal, a BHAG. But just something that, and Tony Robbins even talks about this, of just being really clear in what you're going for, really picturing it in extreme detail. And that stood out for me from Charlie's conversation, as he knew this is what he wanted to do, and he had that clear vision of what he wanted to do after the military. And I think this applies, I mean, I think it applies if you're getting out after 5 years or 28 years like Charlie did. I also think it applies when you're in your job, of just having a clear view of where you're headed and what you're going after. And the benefits of that that I took away from Charlie's insights was he had more financial discipline. He was able to put away money because it was going to something. That money was spoken for. It was going to go for buying longhorn cattle or buying more land or buying chickens or chicken feed. It also allowed him to use his spare time instead of playing Xbox, nothing against Xbox, but instead of playing Xbox, to read, to study, and to learn, and to grow, and incrementally take steps towards his dream. I also like, you know, something that I wouldn't have thought of about having that goal is that it gave him a sense of peace and calming down. He talked about it being a happy spot and deployments and value of having that tangible goal. And I think that, you know, I'm just guessing that part of that psychologically is that it gives your brain a sense of purpose. It's like, hey, you don't need to stress out as much about the transition from the military. We have a goal. We have a plan in place. So just 2 cents, but I think that was really good advice that Charlie gave. I also appreciated how he talked about veterans wanting to be their own boss. I'm not sure I entirely put that together until this episode, but it is a common thread that so many veterans want that autonomy. They want that freedom after having been in the military. I loved his thoughts on marketing. And I think this applies just as much about marketing yourself in a resume and an interview. It applies just as much to entrepreneurship. It applies just as much about, you know, really speaking for yourself in your job, advocating for a raise. It applies to so many different things, not just the farming context that Charlie and I spoke about. But I love that he, you know, dresses up in that kilt. I love that he approaches people and gives them flowers. He is willing to stand out. And the line that he said that really struck me was not waiting for someone to come out and discover you. I know in so many different aspects of my life, I have a sense of entitlement or expectation that if I just do a good job, people will discover me. And it would be so great if it worked that way, but it doesn't. You really have to sell yourself. You have to be willing to go out there and talk to people. And, you know, I sometimes look down on these people that I see in every dinner and every networking event and every social occasion. They're always talking about their business or side job or passion or whatever it is. And I know that there's something there in my judgment of them, that there's something that I'm afraid of. And if you're listening and there's judgment there, I would encourage you to look at that, because I do think that this is something you're going to have to reconcile in your civilian career, is being able to be your own advocate, not expecting people to come to you, but being out there, telling them about what you've done, telling them about what you've accomplished, and do it in a way that's authentic to you, but also doesn't sell yourself short. And I think that that's some of the best advice you could possibly have as you transition to your civilian career. I also liked, he had this thought of having entrepreneurial spirit, going out, hustling, going after it, and not burning yourself out. And I, with Storybox burnt out, I had a year where I just was just not as motivated and not as productive. And so I know the value of that advice of having, even if you're in a corporate job with thousands of employees, having that entrepreneurial spirit, going after things, building, growing, learning, and really listening to your body. That's a phrase that I always heard in running that I like, listening to your body. And if you have those times where you're doing harm to yourself by pushing ahead, you need to back off. You need to find balance. You need to find other pursuits that may fulfill you and fill you back up. And then lastly, I loved his thoughts at the end of just really if you're not successful, getting back up and trying again. If you haven't listened to my episode on failing forward, please listen to that episode. It sticks with me. I hope it sticks with you. I think it is such vital information for anyone in their career, especially veterans. But I love that he articulated that all the different traits that you bring to your civilian career, selfless service, leadership, responsibility, and he really harped on perseverance. And I think that's true. Whether you realize it or not, having served in the military, you have so much tenacity, resilience, and perseverance. And I can think of no better attributes to apply to any job. And he gave that example of the creek overflowing multiple times and destroying his fence. And it's just building that muscle, being able to get back in there and try again. I really think more and more that makes the difference, the critical difference in every career that I've interviewed for this show. Those were my main takeaways, other than, you know, just a huge gas tank of energy. I just really, really admire Charlie, what he is doing and the way that he is advocating for other veterans and the way that he is just living a life that's so well aligned with what he wants. I hope this has helped you. If it has, I would love to hear a positive review on iTunes. It helps get the word out about the show. And also would love to hear your thoughts in the show notes. Would love to get a dialogue going in the comments section at beyondtheuniform.io. That's all. I'll be back with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career next week. Take care.